Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the VRO. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties at the moment, so please just bear with us. I've got to figure out how to do this stuff. Sorry about all this. Switchboard got messed up, so I'm trying to figure out how to do all this stuff.
Brandon?
Yeah, hey.
Hey, and I think we have Jonathan. Jonathan?
Yes, hello.
Hi. How are you doing?
Great.
Sorry.
Okay, so we're going to have to edit this part before we put it up. I don't know what happened, but our switchboard just totally crashed right before we went on air. So I'm going to leave you in Brandon's hands and enjoy your interview.
Great, thank you so much.
Do we want to just start like where we were, like an essay after Blog Talk Radio?
Brandon, you're on air now.
Okay. All right, welcome everybody to the VRO. Today is Thursday, September 6, 2012. I'm your host, Brandon Conyers, and tonight we will be interviewing award-winning director, producer, media arts and science teacher Jonathan Caulfield. And we will be talking with Jonathan about his documentary, Once in a Lullaby, the story of the PS-22 chorus. Welcome to the VRO, Jonathan. How you doing
today?
Hey,
thanks. I'm doing great. It's great to be talking to you.
Yeah, I wanted to say thank you for the screener. It was really, really good to see this. Believe it or not, I'm a heavy metal guy, so I wasn't too... but this actually really opened my eyes. It was a very good documentary.
Thank you so much. Incidentally, I am also a heavy metal fan. Metallica was my first tape I ever owned back in fifth grade in 1985. And, you know, it's interesting that you say that because I think one of the things that's been wonderful about working on this project has been that it's really shown me the universality of music and the appeal that music has. And the PS-22 chorus, just the music appeals to people across a huge spectrum. Everybody from heavy metal or hardcore fans to I've even had a couple opera singers tell me that they think it's really amazing what they do. And I'm not sure what the reason for that is. I think partially it has to do with the fact that it's kids making the music and that this music is coming from this really pure, innocent place. But it really does. It has a wide appeal. So I'm glad to see that still holding true.
Yes, it is. How did this project come together? How was it that you were able to put this project together?
Well, like you mentioned, I'm a public school teacher. I teach at Dickinson High School in Jersey City. And a close friend of mine from Jersey City is the principal of PS-22. You know, we're both educators, so we talk shop a lot. And I teach media arts and sciences, and I've been also treading a lot of the same ground as Greg Breinberg, the PS-22 chorus director, in that, you know, my students work on pop music. We've put videos up online. So we talk about this type of stuff. And she's been keeping me updated on it for almost a decade now. I've been a fan. And, you know, we joked around about doing a documentary, and I thought about it, but it never seemed to be the right time. And then she invited me to video their holiday concert in 2010. And being a teacher, I had videoed a bunch of holiday concerts. So I said, okay. She said, do this as a favor. I said, okay. And I went there, and when I got there, you know, I had my rig and everything, and she told me, you know, there's a surprise, Anne Hathaway is coming, and she's going to invite them to sing at the Oscars, and I was just blown away. I couldn't believe it. So I shot that night, and I got home, I looked at the footage, and just, I realized it was the right time, you know, it was definitely the right time to do it, and it was, you know, I think the timing really is what opened up the door for us as far as the school system's concerned.
Yeah, and speaking of Mr. B, as the kids call him, you referred to him as Greg, what was it like working with him?
Oh, it was the best. I mean, he's just such an amazing guy. He's so dynamic. He's just, you know, for lack of a better term, he's such good vibes, you know. And he and I really connected. You know, but the fact that both of us are teachers and, like I said, we treaded a lot of the same ground. Because that first night at that Christmas concert, you know, I'm shooting him and I'm thinking, you know, himself and a lot of the things that you struggle with as a documentary filmmaker, initially getting your subject to trust you and feel comfortable in front of the camera, that wasn't an issue. You know, the first moment I turned the camera on, he was just totally comfortable, and it was just, we really had that connection that you hope for as a documentary filmmaker with your subject. And at first I thought he was, you know, a little bit, I was like, oh, he's green, I'm very lucky, he's naive, I'm getting him at a good time. And then the next time I visited the course, he had an interview with the Wall Street Journal, and it was totally different. He was, you know, very media savvy, you know, my assumption was completely wrong. And it was that we just had this connection. It wasn't that he was green at all, because he wasn't at all.
Yeah, kind of a teacher-teacher kind of connection thing, and then turns into something bigger.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking of things being a little bit crazy, you guys traveled a lot in this film with children. How crazy was that, all the children in the chorus?
It was pretty crazy. We lucked out in that the film crew didn't actually fly with them. We knew we weren't going to be able to shoot on the plane, and so we didn't fly with them. I heard, you know, that was pretty intense. We did travel on the bus a lot with them, and that was intense enough for us. Yeah, they were dancing around on the bus, and, you know, they were just so excited, you know. So they were a gigantic mass of energy.
Yeah, I can imagine. It totally came out in the movie. I was like, oh, man, I've got to ask this guy this question, because I know me and being around little kids, and, like, just two of them are a handful to deal with. And I was like, oh, Lord, he's got to shoot this. And all those kids was like, that poor man. But one of the things I wanted to know, the name of the school, PS22, it's just a code. How come the school, with the attention that the course is bringing, and where I'm from, our schools are always named, how come it doesn't have a name yet? Is that just, like, one of those things?
That's one of the things about New York City public schools, is the New York City public schools are numbered. Some of them do have names, but usually they're still kind of known by their number. PS stands for public school, and so it's public school 22. And, not that imaginative, and I'm actually not even sure if PS22 has a name, when some of them do, but no, just public school 22.
Well, that's kind of weird. But speaking of the attention the course is getting for the school, their YouTube channel gets millions of hits a day. And how do you think the fame affects the children in the course?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I was concerned as a documentary filmmaker, you know, working with children and the whole concept in the media of, you know, the child star and fame being what it is, you know, we've seen many examples of it having a negative effect on people. So I was concerned, but my concern was completely alleviated by the fact that Mr. B, Greg Breinberg, does such an amazing job at putting, you know, the attention the kids are getting into perspective. You know, he really keeps them grounded, and he keeps a close eye on them. And if they, you know, if they start acting like a diva or getting a big head or something, he just deals with it right away. And I can tell you, he's so effective at it that the kids really just had this great perspective. They had a level of maturity, and it's exactly what you would hope. It was, this experience was a positive experience for them, and it didn't have that negative implication that I was concerned with. And, you know, you can see this in the movie, too, you know. I mean, that last scene where he really puts it into context, and he says, you know, if you ever go in the rest of your life, if you start doubting yourself or if you stop believing yourself, you know, go back to this. And making that experience something that really just builds their self-confidence and helps them understand that they truly can believe, they truly can achieve anything, that's really just the best thing you could hope for in a situation like that.
Yeah, and speaking of his methods, in the film, the children are asked to sing a different way than what they're used to singing, and it didn't work out so well. And then they're told, okay, go back to the way you usually sing, and they knock the performance out of the park. In your opinion, what is it about Mr. B's method that brings out the best performance in these children?
Oh, that's a great question. He really has the kids, as he says, feel the music and use their entire bodies as an instrument. You know, obviously, as vocalists, their body is their instrument. And, you know, it would be easy to say that, okay, their voice, their throat, their lungs, that's the part of their body. But if you see the kids, you know, and this was part of what the television producer at the Oscars was concerned about, they each move in their own unique way, and they move their entire bodies when they're singing. And that is at the core of his teaching method. And I really think that giving them that freedom and allowing them to feel the music with their entire body just allows them to really make music from just a really pure place. And, you know, it really makes a difference. You know, we were there during that rehearsal when, you know, they were asked to just stand there still, and it was a totally different sound. It was a totally different sound. And I think he's really onto something there. I don't think it's a traditional teaching method, but definitely works.
Well, I wish my chorus teacher would have told us to do that, because I was so bored standing up there singing. I was watching him, and I was like, why couldn't I have had him for a teacher?
I hear that a lot. Chorus teachers take notes.
Exactly. What was the most challenging part about shooting this documentary?
The most challenging part for me really was the fact that I was pretty ill during the course of production. I had a tick-borne illness. I was I'm an avid outdoorsman. I hike a few times a week as my way of exercising and meditation. So where I hike in New Jersey, there's a lot of ticks that carry Lyme disease, as well as some other diseases that ticks carry. And I basically, because I was outside so much, I ended up with pretty much all of them. So I had Bartonella, Lyme disease, Babesia, and it was affecting my brain. It was affecting my heart. I was having nervous system symptoms. So it was pretty tough, to be honest with you. I didn't even know how it was like getting through the day, let alone, you know, producing and directing a movie. But really the music just healed me. It gave me the energy to go on. You know, I feel like garbage, and I'd get there, and I just couldn't imagine how I was going to, you know, how I was going to even just be able to get the camera up on my shoulder. And as soon as they started singing, it was like, everything was okay, you know.
It's funny that you say that, because one of the little girls was kind of feeling bad too at Disneyland, And it kind of seemed like when they started singing, her voice was shot, but she just still went through with it. It's funny that you say that it healed you, because that's kind of what it showed happened to her during that performance.
Yeah, you know, it was a theme. It was a theme. And, you know, there's a couple other instances as well. And it's true, you know. I mean, people use music for healing all the time, and, you know, a lot of times we're not even conscious that we're doing it, but if we really feel good, you know, we'll put on that song that makes us feel better. And it works, you know, and thank God for it.
Exactly, exactly. Well, seeing as how that was the challenging part, and that seems to be, sounds pretty challenging, what was your favorite part of shooting?
My favorite part of shooting was, you know, working with the kids, because they were great. They were so warm, and, you know, I'd walk in, and this was another thing, I'd be, like, feeling like garbage, and I'd walk into the auditorium, and if they were already rehearsing, they'd yell, "Jonathan, yay!" You know, one would come up and give me a hug, and they were just so nice, and throughout the whole process now, you know, that shoot is over, but I still see the kids and their families at screenings and stuff, and it's just, it's great. We really, I feel like we formed a bond, and, like, these kids are all, like, my little brothers and sisters in a way, or my nephews or something, because, you know, they're just great. They're really great kids, and the fact that we were there with them for this exciting part in their life, I think, gave us a kind of bond that is just really special. So the kids, definitely, they were my favorite part of this process.
It sounds like this is, like, you know, even though it comes out in the movie, because, like I said, I'm, you know, we're heavy metal guys, so it's kind of like that bond just kind of, it doesn't matter what kind of music, it's just there. You can't deny it. It's really cool.
Yeah.
One of the things that I was curious about shooting was the Academy Awards and how accommodating they were for you to shoot. Was there any difficulties there?
Yeah, that's a funny story, actually. You know, initially, I didn't even really think that the movie was going to be made, to be honest with you. I was shooting it because I loved doing it, because it was fun. But initially, what we were doing is we were shooting basically shooting a video for the parents. So, you know, that's when we went to the Academy, we said, you know, we're shooting a video for the families because they couldn't be here. And that was the honest truth, you know. That's what we were doing. And because we were with the kids, they gave us this access. And, you know, it is pretty unprecedented. I mean, the Academy, obviously, you know, they keep a really tight lid on things, and they control, you know, they control what goes on very tightly. But they were very accommodating to us. And I put the piece together. I put all the stuff that we shot together for the parents. And I showed it to the Academy. I wanted to make a film out of it, and I told them so. And they saw it, and, you know, I think that they just fell in love with the kids so much. They said, "This is great. Yes, we'll give you permission to use this stuff." And, you know, they gave me permission, and I can't believe it, to be honest with you. It's an amazing thing as a filmmaker, but they were really amazing. I mean, they were so great to the kids. You know, they took such good care of them and did so many neat things. I think they almost, you know, I think being with the kids has really helped me out in that regard.
Yeah, it brings out the kids and everybody.
yeah, that's right.
Do you have any future projects that you want to talk about, or anything that you got lined up? Any kind of, like, documentary you're interested in doing next?
Well, I am really, I'm really interested in a couple things, but at this point I have to keep them, kind of private. I'm really actually trying not to do another documentary, because I really want to just focus on my teaching, and it takes so much out of you. And, you know, it's for the past 2 years I've been doing nothing but, so I'm trying to take a break, but I've got a couple of things in my head that really are calling me, so I don't know how long to bring it. I wish I could tell you more, but check in at newjerseypictures.net for the latest news, and as soon as I commit to it, I will definitely put it up there.
That was our next question. Do you have any social media accounts so that people can keep up to date with what you're doing and what's coming up next?
Yes, we keep the blog at newjerseypictures.net. You can find us on Twitter at NJ Pictures, and search on Facebook for Once in a Lullaby, the PS22 chorus documentary. Please like us. That's probably the best place to get the latest pictures, news, and we're going to be starting to release some a couple of weeks that are probably going to go out on Facebook first. But yeah, Twitter and Facebook are the best place to get the latest information. So at NJ Pictures, NewJerseyPictures.net, and you got to search us out on Facebook.
All right. Well, that sounds good. Well, that's the last of my questions, Jonathan. Thank you so much for coming on to the VRO and talking to us about this film.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure talking to you.
It was a pleasure talking to you, too.
All right. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Awesome interview. So, guys, we are back from DragonCon, and if you want to hear a little bit about our DragonCon recap, you can check out the Horror Hour show that we did last night. And, that's it. We are done for the week. And starting next week, let me grab my calendar real quick. Yes, starting next week, we will be back with our Sons of Anarchy show. I cannot wait. And then our fall season will start.
Yeah, I'm excited about all the shows. So excited, especially Sons of Anarchy.
So, guys, we're going to call it a night, and thanks for listening.
Thanks, Internet.
Do you love movies, music, books, television? You do? Then come on over to the VRO on Blog Talk Radio. We have shows for all your obsessions. Vampires, we've got them. The latest blockbuster movies, they're right here. Bands and books, music and fiction, it's all at the VRO. What are you waiting for? Log on to the VRO today. www.thevro.com.